got the drive to create things. You're a writer, a photographer, a musician, a maker. You're ready to make things happen.
But chasing creative isn't always easy. Your time and energy go to your work, your family, and your life. Is it really possible to make space for the creative in your everyday life?
Here at the Chasing Creative Podcast, we believe you can. We're everyday creatives who have insights and action steps you can take today to make your creative plans happen.
I'm Ashley Brooks, a freelance writer and editor at Brooks Editorial and a work-at-home mom of three who would love to devote more time to creative writing and journaling.
And I'm Abigail Creeves, the writer and photographer behind Inkwells and Images. I'm also a work-at-home mom of one, learning to balance work and home and trying to find a little bit of time to work on something just for fun.
And you're listening to the Chasing Creative Podcast.
Welcome to Season 5, Episode 5 of the Chasing Creative Podcast. Today we have Ron Vitale on the podcast with us. He is a fantasy and science fiction author, and he holds a master's degree in English literature from Villanova University. He's also a runner, a parent, and a husband, and holds down a full-time job in technology at a local university. So Ron has self-published 9 novels and 1 nonfiction book in the last 10 years, including the Cinderella's Secret Witch Diaries series and the Werewale Saga. Clearly, he stays very busy, and I have long admired Ron for his tenacity to keep writing while living a very full life, and we're really excited to have him here with us on the podcast today. So thank you for joining us, Ron.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, so you have been, like Abby said, I mean, you pretty much do it all. You have been writing, parenting, working full time, and you've been doing all of these things for a few years now, and you are not showing any signs of slowing down, miraculously enough. And recently, you put out a nonfiction book called How to Become a Successful Author While Working Full Time. So you're kind of an expert on the subject, and we would really love to hear how you've consistently been able to make writing a priority, even though you've been in all these different, really full seasons. So what's your strategy?
So I think what happened was, as I was getting close to the big 4-0, I realized that there was never going to be time where I had enough time to do anything beyond, you know, what I normally am prescribed to do. You know, you go to work, you come home, you're with your family, you're doing all this. And typically, creatives put their dreams off to the side. Either they're not going to make the money that, you know, you hoped. It's going to take a lot of work, a lot of effort. And I just decided that I didn't want to be old and gray and look back and say, I never tried. And so I just kind of jumped in with both feet and said, you know what, I'm gonna really write a book. And the book turned into a series, and series turned into other books. And just a whole bunch of creative ideas came when I allowed myself the freedom to do it at my own pace.
Yeah, doing it at your own pace is good advice for anyone. I know the internet feels like it rushes and rushes and rushes us, and that is not necessarily how art gets made on a daily basis. So I know when you and I were emailing back and forth to set up this interview, you mentioned the phrase intentional creativity. So what do you mean by that, and how does an artist really put that into practice in their daily life?
I think the challenge is, when I say intentional creativity, there really needs to be, in my personal opinion, a plan. How are you going to get from, you know, the first step of, I have an idea for a book, or it could be artwork, or it could be music, or fill in the blank, whatever your expertise is, to that final, you know, dream of, I have the book, I've, you know, in a band, whatever, made the movie. I decided that I had to kind of find my way each day, breaking down a long amount of steps into very bite-sized pieces, so that it was very easy for me to say, you know what, I can complete a book. A book is only 80,000 to 90,000 words. If I do it X amount of times per week, and I am accountable to that work on a daily basis, and write it down and stick to that plan, over time, I'm going to have a first draft. And so when I first started this out with the first book in the Cinderella Secret Witch Diary series, I had no idea what I was doing. It took me 18 months to get from concept to actually the book in my hand. I have since kind of brought that down. It takes me now more somewhere depending on 6 months to 8 months. I know other writers can pop a book out a month. I can't do that because, again, I'm a father, I'm working full time, I'm a runner, I do all these things. I diversify and try my best to have a well-lived life rather than I'm only doing one thing. So when I say, you know, intentional creativity, it's when I get up today. Today is a Wednesday. I have a schedule, and it's a very loose schedule. It's Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, I run before I go to work. And then the other days of the week, I'm either writing, editing, or doing marketing for my books. It's a very simple schedule that I've allowed myself to kind of build out over time so I can figure out all the steps that I need to get from A to the completed book Z.
Wow. So that sounds like you're really taking advantage of the early morning hours and really almost breaking it down into like a math equation. Like if you put this much time in, like this is how long it'll take you to write a book. And it's just, it's really simple and it's logical. And as being a person myself who is, I tend to overcomplicate things and maybe make things a little bit more dramatic than they need to be. So hearing that type of a plan and how well that has worked for you is really, really helpful for me to hear personally. And I'm sure I'm not the only one. I'm sure many of our listeners can resonate with that. So thank you for sharing that. I'm feeling kind of inspired by that schedule. Like how can I do something like that in my life now?
Well, I will share this. When I wrote last year the How to Become a Successful Author While Working Full-Time book, I looked at that book as it's really a memoir of what I went through to get to the schedule. I know when NaNoWriMo, the national writers, you know, write a book in the month of November. I didn't do it in November, but I did try doing that and did publish a book. I did it in 1 month in January. I did something like 57,000 words. And I just looked back and was like, well, if all these other people can do it, I can do it. And I did do it. But if my wife were sitting next to me, I think she would say, I think we almost got divorced at that time. To be very honest, and that was something that I write about, those real life experiences, you know, in that book where there is a moment of time where you look at yourself and you say, I can't do everything, and then follow up with that and say, and that's okay. You can't have everything all at the same time in 1 month or in 2 months or in 3 months. What I realized over time from having, you know, gone through this process is I'm on a journey and I'm looking at the long haul, 10, 20 years. I have now 9 books, fiction books, 1 nonfiction, and next month I'm going to be publishing my next book, fiction book. And over time, it's just going to keep growing and growing and growing. If my neighbor is doing 30 books a year and I'm only doing 1 or 2, that's what my neighbor's doing. It's not for me to make a judgment on. And I think as creatives, we beat each other, like we beat ourselves up a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, we feel guilt or shame. I should be doing more. I should be more advanced where I am. And that's something that I have worked really hard in the last 2 years to say, I may not be as financially successful with my writing as I would like, but you know what? 8 years ago, I didn't have anything. And now look where I have. What do I want to do to get in the next level moving forward the next couple of years? So I do believe it's possible to be very successful in what you want to do with your creativity. But I also think it needs to be something that's really reasonable for you. And each person is different. Each person's family and work environment is different. And I think that's really important to kind of focus on, is what's going to be good for you.
That is so smart. I was just reading something this week from someone online, and now I'm struggling to remember who it was. Sarah Von Bargen, I believe is her name, if you guys are familiar with her. Yep. But she was saying how she set goals for yourself that are achievable based on you controlling them. Don't set goals for yourself that, I guess, rest on someone else somewhere making the rules for your goal to happen. So like her example was, they want to purchase a house. They don't control the real estate market, but they do control how much money they are putting into their savings account each week or each month. And so having a goal that they control the outcome of is a much more achievable and sanity-inducing thing than having a goal that you don't control the outcome of. So I love that you have kind of detached the word successful from money in this circumstance, Ron. Like, yes, you could be more financially successful, but you're still doing what you want to be doing and you're making it happen. And that, at the end of the day, is much more fulfilling than not doing it at all.
I think Sarah's article is right on the money mm-hmm. with that. And, you know, my wife and I, you know, we have these conversations where, you know, if I'm having a dark day, I'll get frustrated and say, you know, I'm working so hard. I joke and I say, you know, I could be working at a pizza joint on the side and I could be making more money in the course of a year than what I'm doing on these books. And she says, yes, but you have these books. They're your intellectual property. You don't know what's going to happen in the future with them. Don't give up on your dream. And I think that is really important to kind of focus on and say, you know what? I may not have everything, but that, how do I define success? And I think one of the things that hit me is I have a newsletter that goes out to, it's around 1,400 readers. And there was a woman that wrote to me once and said, I am really inspired by your books, but unfortunately I have MS and I've been getting these headaches. I love reading your books, but I can't do it anymore. And I wrote to her and I said, you know, I have the audio versions of the books, and I just sent them to her. I gave her free coupons on Audible and she was through the moon like about it. And that connection of one reader and one author, two people connecting together. You know what? I felt really good that I was able to help someone. And I do look at that as that's a success, that's something that you can't really put a price tag and money on when you know that there are people that have been touched by the things that you have created and it has changed their lives and they've shared that with you. To me, that's why I want to be a writer. I want to be a writer because I love telling stories and I love helping to touch people's lives and changing their lives. I've wanted to do that since I was 9. So I share those stories so that people can detach the money aspect. Money will come, but it may not come when, you know, right in the beginning or even in the middle. It's a journey. You have to figure out what's going to work best for you, and you might have to wear multiple hats. And right now I'm working full time and I'm doing the writing of my books at 5:30 in the morning.
Yes, that's an excellent perspective to have about success and connection to your creative work and outlet. And so speaking of creative work and potentially the reason that you have to get up so early to do your work is that you are also a father, and you are really intentional about encouraging your kids to explore their own creative gifts. So Abby and I are both parents ourselves, and many of our listeners are too. So how have you been able to nurture that in your kids over the years?
The interesting thing is, you know, when you have kids, I remember when I, you know, my son is the eldest, and my wife and I, we had no idea what we're doing, you know, in the beginning. We're reading the books and we're listening to everything that everybody's teaching us. And yeah, I just, you know, we just had no idea what we're doing. And we really wanted to focus on one, both my wife and I, we were English majors, you know, in college. We love reading and just the basic sitting down and reading with your kids. Mm-hmm. And both of my kids, my daughter and my son, you know, I would do things where I'd go to put them to bed and I'd make up stories, goofy stories about characters that they liked from the shows that they watched or whatever, just made it up, you know, so they could see that, you know, together we could create something that was fun and exciting. And as they got older, I decided to involve them in my own creative process. Both of them were old enough by the time I wrote the second book in the Cinderella Secret Witch Diaries that I have a big whiteboard in our bedroom. And thankfully my wife is very patient that I have this big whiteboard, and that's where I put all my ideas for my stuff on it. And I asked each of my kids, I said, look, here's names of these characters. And I gave them very general descriptions of what they are. And I'm like, here's a piece of paper. What do you think that is? Just draw it. And they loved it. They were like, oh, Dad, we get to draw what the fairy princess is. I'm like, yeah, I don't make it up. What do you think that means to you? And so they would hand me their drawings and I would take them and I would label what the character was. And then I would print them, you know, put them up and attach them to the whiteboard. And then as I was plotting out the stories, I could see a physical representation of like what that character was. You know, Queen Mab from, you know, Irish folklore was one of the characters in my Cinderella's Secret Witch Diary series. And my daughter had drawn this little, like, you know, crayon witch with like little fairies all around that looked like little bees. And it was just really cute. And so there was a way for me to be able to share with them on a very creative level of saying, here is a word, here's a person. What is in your head? Draw that. I don't care how your skill is. I don't care what it is. Just be creative. And so over time, both my, you know, my daughter and my son, my daughter has already written like, you know, her own. She's gone through and made pictures and wrote a book, you know, and she's done all kinds of stuff. My son has like a YouTube channel now and he's making videos. I just think it's very important as a parent to foster as much creativity and in your child as you possibly can. And when I look back, it all started with reading and telling stories. I just think that was really important when they were extremely little. In fact, before my son and daughter was born, I remember talking into my wife's belly, you know, and you know, talking and telling stories, you know, even back at before they were born. And I just think it's really important to have that connection with your kids, to not put a box around what creativity is, but allow them to experiment, to fail, to succeed, and just grow.
Yeah, I love that. As someone whose kid is still too little to even string words together into phrases, it can be really hard to think that you're connecting creatively with this little person. But the last couple of months, we've gotten this book, and I'll tell you both about it because even your kids, as old as they are, Ron, would probably get a kick out of it. It's called There's a Monster in Your Book, and it's kind of interactive. You have to, like, you know, tickle the monster and, you know, turn the page and yell really loud to try to get the monster out. And he loves this book. And we have had to hide it because we're like, we have read it 15 times today. We are not reading the monster book again. But even seeing him like interact with a story like that, that interaction has been so great. And I hope a preview of what is to come. We'll see. But yeah, it's been hard with the little itty bitty kids. And I know Ashley's oldest is 4. So I feel like you, Ashley, maybe are just getting into that, you know, Hadley can color independently phase and that kind of thing. Does that seem accurate?
Yeah, Hadley is my little artist. So she doesn't care quite so much about the books, which makes me a little bit sad. She's taking after her dad and is super into drawing and projects. So everything is all cutting up paper and glue and tape. And she can draw far better than I can already at her age. And she, you know, she made a princess crown out of paper and tape the other day and was trying to tape it to her sister's head. And it's like, oh yeah, you're going to be a maker of some sort. And that's fantastic. So just all the paper for you, kid.
Oh goodness. So I know, Ron, for the last handful of years, you have written on your blog at the end of the year, a recap with, I mean, your book sales and numbers and advertising costs, and you've been really transparent about the financial reality of being an independent author in today's marketplace. So what pushed you to be this transparent, and how has it helped or maybe even hurt your writing life a little bit?
I think I had networked with several romance writers several years ago, and it was extremely disheartening to hear, you know, the thousands upon thousands of dollars they were making per month on selling, you know, their books. And not being in that genre, knowing that, you know, the genres that I write in are not necessarily as, you know, popular in selling as compared to the romance and thrillers right now in the indie publishing world are, you know, going through the roof. And I knew that there were many other people like myself, you know, that's struggling selling books, But then when you take in the real cost of what's the cost for your website, what does it cost for your G Suite, what does it cost for MailChimp, what does it cost for your advertising, like what does it really cost to run a writer's business, I thought it would be a service and passing it forward to those who are in the same situation as me and also those who have the dream of being a writer, so they could see it's not... Many people write these books of like, oh, do these three magical things and you're going to be a millionaire. That lightning normally doesn't strike twice. And a lot of those quick rich, you know, get rich quick schemes don't last in the long term. And I am a big follower of Christine Catherine Rush. She does a business musings blog every week. She is an award-winning science fiction author. She's written, you know, romance. She's written mysteries. She's been, I think, at one point the editor of Science Fiction and Fantasy magazine. I really respect her. And she and I have networked, you know, over the last couple years, and she's read my articles. And she wrote to me and said, what you're going through and the struggles and not making money in these early years is not unusual. It is part of how difficult it is as a writer to make a full-time salary doing that. And so you have your full-time job and you're doing this on the side. You don't have the ability to put everything full-time into it. So it's going to take longer. And I think, you know, hearing that of like, you're going to have to get through a difficult time and you're going to have to look in the mirror and realize, do you want to give up? Or do you want to keep moving forward? And so, you know, I've been doing this. My first Cinderella book was out 2011. So, you know, I'm getting near on, 8 years in being able to put these books out. I'm still at a point where I'm not cash positive. I'm very honest with that. You know, and again, some people say, well, why do you still do it? And what I've realized is I do it because I love to write. If I were to just write to market, which is what a lot of successful writers are doing now, they see what's popular today. You know, the 50 Shades of Grey a couple years ago, everybody rushed to that and they were making money for a certain amount of time. And then when, you know, vampires were no longer popular or werewolves or this or that, they kept having to, you know, be on the rat race. And what am I going to write next? What am I going to write next? And I decided that's not what I want to do. I am not chasing after the demon to get to, you know, just so I can make money. That's not where I want to be. And I'm not saying that that's bad. It's just, that's not the career path for me. I'm building a systematic world building experience, different sagas, different characters over multiple different series. That's literally taking me about 10 years to build. And I wanted to share that story with people. So one, I can look back each year and it keeps me honest and I can see what worked, what didn't work. And the interesting thing is the industry, the indie publishing is evolving so quickly, and the podcasts and the other podcasts that I've been on and interviewing and talking with people, this last year has been a tremendous amount of change because I keep hearing other indie authors saying you have to advertise. Whereas 7 years ago, you could just put a free book up on Amazon and then, you know, you're going to get thousands of downloads and then people are going to get your second book and third book. And that weight of needing to learn all these other things and putting on a marketing hat as well as your writing hat, it's something that is, it can be disheartening, to be honest. But, you know, I look at it as a lot of my skills and things that I'm learning are transferable to my day job. It allows me to network with other authors, to help other authors. They help me. You know, I look at it as, again, I have sold and I have made money, you know, with my books. Have I made a lot of money? No, I'm very honest. And I put all my numbers out there and I intend to do a year end this year and put that out there. So again, I'm going for the long haul and I follow this from, again, Christine Catherine Rush's, you know, history of, don't go for the short term, I want to make a lot of money. If you're a writer, an author, and you want to do this for years, focus on it for years. Like, build your business. Learn what it means to market and to be a good entrepreneur. Don't just focus and say, I'm going to knock out 12 books this year, but I'm not going to learn what it means, you know, to have intellectual property rights and, you know, and learning all the ins and out of the industry. So what I knew back in 2011 with what I know now, I have grown a lot. I've learned a lot. And I think that's part of the journey as an author. You know, in my opinion, it's good to learn new things, and it's good to share and say, this is what worked this year. Last year, it worked. This other thing didn't work. And I like sharing those numbers out, even though, you know, it can be a little deflating to see that it's not bringing in the money that I would hope.
That's a really good point. And I think that transparency about all the money side of things and the way the industry is going is something that a lot of, especially newer writers, don't necessarily think about, or they don't know where to get started. And so seeing somebody who has already been a few years down that path is really, really helpful. And the fact that it helps keep you accountable to yourself, like you said, that's also a really great reason to be so transparent in sharing all that information. And I know in those posts, a lot of the information that you're sharing about is the types of tools that you use, because of course, you need different things to promote your books and to keep everything organized as you're writing, and those things are not always free. But what sorts of tools do you use to help you achieve your creative goals that you might not otherwise be able to do without them?
Well, I'd say about 2-3 years ago, I really loved a tool called Scrivener. It's a software that essentially is part Microsoft Word, part tool that allows you to plot out your novel. You know, it allows you to create different folders, so you can say, oh, I've got some character ideas, or I have some pictures. You can throw everything all together. It is a really good tool, and I think it's under $100. I used it for a couple of my books, loved it. But the reality of my life came in, and I realized that Google Suite works much more efficiently for me. When I'm in the train and I have my iPhone with me, I can pull up a Google Doc, I can write notes, I can update a Google Sheet, I can do all kinds of stuff. Whereas Scrivener, it was really based to, you know, one or two laptops in the house. And then if I went, you know, somewhere else, if I went on vacation, I had to bring that laptop that had Scrivener with me. Or if I was somewhere else and used somebody's computer, I couldn't do that work. I had to email myself, you know, a chapter or an idea or wherever. I just found that using Google Suite is so much more efficient for me. I think it's like $60 a year. I have it tied into my domain, so ronvital.com, so I can, you know, make sure I have the domain tied into the Google Suite, which means I have a Gmail account, which is tied to ronvital.com, so I can use this as my professional email. You know, again, you get all the power of Google Drive, Google Sheets, Google Analytics. I use Google Tag Manager to basically tie in different campaigns, so that way when I'm trying to track, let's say, how many people are downloading a PDF on my site, or a .mobi file, or .epub file, all those different things, I can do all that just from Google. And again, I can be anywhere. I could be in a car as a passenger, and I get an idea, and I can write, you know, that down. I can organize all my files by folders. I could do a lot of great work with that. So I really enjoyed Scrivener a lot, but I found that working in the cloud was much more suited to my type of lifestyle with, you know, traveling. I have near an hour commute on multiple trains from home to go to work. And it just made that time so much more efficient. Mm-hmm. So Google Suite is a really big thing for me. And then within the last year, I had tried this a couple years ago and I did not understand how to use the tool, Trello. Trello is a free tool. Essentially, it allows you to create digital index cards that you can drop on a blank canvas. And for your listeners out there, they have fantastic free templates on how to organize your child's birthday party. Mm-hmm. And you get this template, you load it into Trello, and you see all these things. Whatever you're trying to organize, it could be meals of the week, it could be you know, ideas for a birthday party. It could be I'm doing something for, you know, my novel and I need to write the book. I need to send it to the editor. I need to do the graphic design work. I need to write my newsletter. So imagine all those different tasks as these digital cards that you could basically open up, attach links to, add image to. You could coordinate with multiple people so that you could task or give a deadline or a checklist to someone. You could do all this with Trello. And once I started using that, I did find that that made life a lot easier. Again, they have a free iPhone app where you can log in on your desktop. I have a very simple setup Trello board where basically I focus on, I have a column that says priority things to do. You know, then I have a an idea board where I'm trying to throw ideas like a tool or a service or something that I want to remember. I create cards for all those things. You have your completed list, and then I have, you know, things that are in progress. And you can set your own Trello board up any way you want. If you don't think that time is how you organize ideas in your mind, but maybe it's a category, you create it by category. It's a blank slate, so instead of the whiteboard that I have in my, you know, in my bedroom on the wall, it's a digital whiteboard that I can create and build anything with. It's a great tool.
Yeah, I have used all three of those tools before, actually, Scrivener, Google Suite, and Trello, and Scrivener is a really great tool. A lot of writers swear by it, but there is something to be said for just being able to access all of your things mm-hmm. from wherever you happen to be, and to have an app, you know, just makes such a big difference, whereas you can't do that with Scrivener. So depending on what kind of a lifestyle you have and what you need for your, you know, for your creative work, I think those are some really good recommendations for people. And plus they're quite affordable as well. They're nothing that's really going to break the bank. And I use free Trello, and it's, you know, more than enough for what I need. So, have you used any of those, Abby?
I have. I've used all of them. And I know I've used Trello in the past at a couple of different jobs, actually, which was really handy to be able to, like you said, Ron, collaborate with people on things. And then Ashley and I, for the first couple seasons of Chasing Creative, until we got kind of our process down, we used Asana, which is Asana, not exactly like Trello. It's more list-based, but we could assign each other tasks and mark them done. And it also had the option, and I think Trello does this too, where you could copy like a set list of actions and like fill it out for multiple projects. So like episode one, we do the exact same things for episode two, and rather than take the time to build out that list for each episode, we were able to just like copy paste the episode tasks for each one. And so then we were spending less time setting things up and more time just getting things done. And I feel like you can do that in Trello as well.
Yeah, you can. I actually did it at work the other day. You could copy a card, or I believe you could copy a mm-hmm. board, and then you could just basically, like you said, you could just copy everything over and then just tweak as, you know, as you'd like. Again, some of these tools are fantastic and they're free, you know? So, yes, I pay for the Google Suite, but you could have just a regular Gmail account. You're mm-hmm. still going to get your Google Drive and your, you know, Google Sheets and your analytics and all that for your website, the whole deal. So again, you could start small and then you can build out. And I agree with you, Abby. The free version of Trello is more than what I need. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. I love it.
Yeah. Yes, that is true. So taking things back to the personal side again. So we really hate that we have to call this out because we would rather that it not be something that's so unusual in our culture. But you, Ron, are a very involved father. In addition to working full-time and to doing all of your creative writing. So what does that look like for your family and how has that shaped your creativity?
Back when I was young and didn't have gray hair, you know, you have those conversations early part of, you know, your relationship as you're trying to get to know each other. And, you know, obviously you have to decide as a couple, do you want to have children? Do you not want to have children? And, you know, I always knew that I wanted to have, children. And I look back at, you know, my upbringings and, you know, my mom went through a really rough time, you know, with my father, got divorced and basically raised me, you know, on her own. We didn't have enough money. We moved in with my grandparents. So my brother and I went through a pretty rough time. You know, we were young. And I look at that formative time and see what it took for my brother and I to thrive, to be successful, and, you know, how did we become the people who we are? And so when my wife and I, you know, when Karen and I were talking and thinking about having kids, I knew that I wanted to be all in, you know, as a father. So for me, I wanted to make certain that when, you know, we decided to have children, I wasn't just going to be there at the conception part, but I was going to be there all the way through. And so if I'm going to be a father, then I better put my money where my mouth is. And, you know, I took the family medical, you know, leave. I took, I think for my son, I think I took 6 weeks. And I think for my daughter, I took 8 weeks. And, you know, part of going through that process is, I remember taking my son out alone, going to the grocery store. You know, he's in the car seat, getting him out of the car seat, and putting him in a sling and walking around and trying to figure this all out. I didn't want someone to tell me what I needed to do. I wanted to discover it and figure it out on my own so that I had bonding time, you know, with both of my kids. And that was just something that, you know, built that process around of figuring out what does it really mean to be a, you know, a dad. And it means in my mind, you're there, you listen, you're going to go through a wonderful amount of all kinds of emotions as you try to figure out when that kid is screaming at 4 o'clock in the morning and nobody can figure out why. You know, I have those memories, and I remember walking both my son and my daughter around, you know, getting the breast milk and putting it in a bottle and praying to God I didn't spill the milk, because if I did, I had to go get a frozen one, you know, breast milk from the freezer. And I mean, you know, and I remember my wife coming and, you know, coming home one day and she's like, "You look frazzled." And I'm like, "Yeah, because I spilled the milk and I had to go and I had to get another one out. And I was so afraid that if I spilled, you know, another one, I didn't know what I was going to do." And that helps me better understand, like, what does a mom go through on a daily basis, you know? And I think part of that, you know, creatively has allowed me to explore different relationships in the characters in my books. My proofreader wrote back to me the latest fiction book, and she wrote, you know, the dynamic that you have between the mother in the story and the daughter in the story is really well thought out and has great dialogue. And I thought that was such a great comment to hear, because, you know, I take a lot of my experiences of what I've learned as a parent over time, and some of that, you know, bleeds into your creative, you know, work. So to me, it's been a really great, like, symbiotic understanding of getting outside of my comfort zone to learn things as a father that, you know, I just didn't know what the whole father thing was going to be like. And I wish that more dads would do that. I really do, because I think there would be a better understanding of how hard it really is to raise a kid. You know, if you really roll your sleeves up and give a try, you know, let your wife go out with her friends and take care of the kid for a day. Like, do it. cook, clean, change diapers. Like, do it. That's part of what I wanted to be present in, what it means to be married and to be a father. And some of the creativity that comes out of me is when you can switch your mind off and do more, you know, manual work of, you know, I'm going to clean something, or I'm going to do some gardening and plant something. A different part of you is opened to different ideas. And so I found, you know, when I'm either cleaning, or if I'm cooking, or if I'm doing gardening work, or if I'm running, I've learned over time that I've allowed myself the opportunity to be open to non-directed creativity, where the brain is working on a subconscious level, and then I get these bursts of inspiration. I think Elizabeth Gilbert, I forget the name of her last book, but it's about creativity. She talks about, you know, this process, and I really identified with that, because for the longest time, I always believed that your muse, you know, would only speak to you at a certain time. But I've learned that that's not necessarily true. You got to show up and do the work all the time. You know, if I'm tired today, if today's a writing day, I'm still going to write. It may not be the best writing in the world, but, you know, you still write. But the bursts of creativity come when I allow myself the freedom to be open. And that's why I also tied in with running. You go on an hour, you know, run on a race or just, a, you know, 6 miles or 7 miles, whatever you're able to do. It really does. Those endorphins going through me really helps me work out plot ideas in books or problems I got going on in my life. It's a great way of dealing with, you know, ideas without having to like try to force creativity out of your mind, but working in different ways. Let your exercise help exercise your brain, tie it all together. There's only 24 hours in a day, but if you look at the connections of different things with either yoga or meditation or running, you know, some of these things you might say, well, why am I doing that? I only have so many hours. But if you beat yourself up too much, you're going to miss out on self-care and you're not going to be able to be in it for the long haul.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I find too that when I, you know, am having problems getting an essay to come together or whatever, if I step away from my computer and go do something that's not trying to actively sort out whatever creative problem I have, a lot of times my brain figures it out on its own. So whether that's, you know, walking to the mailbox or washing the dishes, like your brain does the work without you having to direct it a lot of the time.
I agree with you. And it took me a long time to figure that out. And it's unfortunate because I think I would have had a lot more ideas. I always thought like, oh, you know, you got one idea and that's the book. You know, that's the thing that's going to be the greatest thing. But unfortunately, that you know, it didn't work out that way. But now I have multiple series. And I never thought, you know, 20 years ago, I had one idea for a book. Now I've had 9 books. I'm almost finishing my 10th book. So if you allow yourself the ability with what you were saying to be open, more ideas are going to come to you. You're going to probably have more ideas than you have the time to be able to write or, you know, again, compose the music or whatever you're trying to do creatively. The ideas are there if you allow yourself the freedom to be able to just be and allow them to come to you. Allow your brain to really kind of just mull those ideas over, take that dream that you had and write it down so you can remember it for a scene that you're going to use in a book maybe a year from now. Like, take advantage of all those things and tie them all together in a nice bow. Use those Trello boards to put those ideas down or Google Docs to file away your ideas. And then, you know, over time, you're going to have something that comes together.
Yes, 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 yes. So I know in one of your emails to me, you said that, and I'm going to quote you directly if you don't mind, being creative and staying positive about it with work and kids and family struggles, the political landscape and everything else happening in the world, it's hard. So being creative is hard. And you have been consciously at this since 2009. Without being positive, focusing on self-care and networking with like-minded creatives, you never would have gotten as far as you have. So how do you stay focused on positivity?
A couple years ago, I tore my Achilles, and I went from running a marathon to I couldn't walk across the room. And losing, you know, having 2 kids, needing to work full time, being able to run, you know, 26.2 miles, and then not being able to get around and, you know, liking to cook, liking to clean, liking to, you know, do all these things and not being able to do those things. Wow. I got hit pretty hard on reality of what if your mobility is taken from you? I was in a cast for, I think it was like 6 weeks. It took me 6 months before I could walk normal again and run again. So for 6 months, you know, I would get up and sometimes, you know, you have pain in your leg. You can't go to the bathroom easy. You can't take a shower easily, like just all those challenges. So after those first couple of days, I had to come to the, you know, a reality with myself and say, okay, what am I going to do here? And I took a post-it note and a pen and I wrote down, be positive. And I took that post-it note and I just stuck it on my monitor. And I just, every time I sat down at my computer where, you know, do a lot of work, I saw that and I realized that I have the ability to be able to change that process in my mind on, I'm either going to look at this and say, oh, woe is me, and not be able to get through, or I got to find ways to make things better. And so I'm a writer, so I wrote many blog posts, you know, about my experience. In fact, the most accessed post on my website is, you know, you've torn your Achilles, now what? I get hundreds and hundreds of, you know, people, traffic years later coming to that, you know, to that page, because I break down everything about it. And I thought, well, if I have to suffer through this, hopefully I can help somebody else. So I looked at it as a conscious decision. Instead of saying, oh, I've got so many weeks left before I get out of my cast, mm-hmm. or I have so many years left before I may be successful as a writer, you know, just focus on today. Like, oh, today I did this, or today went well. Or if it's a difficult day, I really do believe in the power of saying to friends and family, you know, not always complaining, but to focus on and say, I'm having a really difficult time. This was a difficult day. Admitting mm-hmm. it, talking about it, letting it go, and then coming up with some possible ideas, solutions. So again, I have that very simple schedule, you know, Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday run. The rest of the days, writing or writing-related work. But now I've been trying to focus in also some yoga to help me with stretching of my back from when I run, so I don't have to deal with, you know, back pain as much, because I'm a tall person and the way my form is hurting my back. Meditation, try to focus on just simple, you know, 20 minutes, just, or even if I'm on a train, 5 minutes, just to focus breathing techniques on mindfulness. Self-care, I have found, is if you try to ignore it and not take care of yourself, it's going to rear its ugly head. You're going to get sick. You're going to get, you know, have problems in just getting through the difficult parts of life. Again, because I have run marathons, you know, often people say, you know, when you're trying to do something difficult, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. Mm-hmm. And if we try to take, I'm going to write a book, and you sprint, yeah, you might be able to do NaNoWriMo, but what did you have to put aside to be able to do that? And how sustainable is that over 10 years? You can write a book a month, you know, every month. Or can you do a book a year? Can you do 5 books a year? Like, what works for you? And again, that I think is the challenge, is learning all the things you need to learn of how to do your art, do your creativity, but then also understand what your limits are. Know how you need to take care of yourself. You obviously want to spend time with your family. You know, you want to be there with your children. You need to raise your children. How does that all kind of come together? And that is not easy to do. And that's why I like to talk about that, because frankly, I think, you know, a lot of people always focus on the success. Oh, I make $1 million, or I do this, mm-hmm. or I do that. But what did it take for you to get there? You know, what are the struggles that you're going through? I think being honest and open and focusing on that connectivity with like-minded people will be healing and helpful. So that way you can then be prepared for, yes, I'm having a difficult day today, but you know what? I'm still going to write my 500 words. You know, even if the 500 words are the worst words you've ever written, it's still 500 words. And your body starts creating these habits, mm-hmm. Good habits on creativity, good habits on eating healthy, good habits on exercising. You know, everybody keeps saying that, you know, the sitting still is worse for you than smoking. Get up and walk every hour, yeah. You know, take your kid, put your kid on your hip and move around. You know, I just think it's really important that we, again, that intentional creativity, not just necessarily in like the art that you're making, but in the choices that you're making in life. Like, what are you putting in your body? Are you getting enough sleep? You know, are you talking to a friend or listening to a friend, you know, because they're going through a difficult time? That balance is a very complicated mobile that is different for you, different for me, different to all the listeners, you know, listen to this podcast right now.
Yes. And I think that is one of the hardest parts, is trying to find that balance for yourself as an individual, especially in a world that likes to shout at you at what your balance should be. So I don't know if you've experienced that with social media and everything, but everyone's telling you, like, you need to exercise every day and you need to drink, you know, 80 ounces of water and you need to do this and you need to do that, but don't necessarily always account for the fact that you only have 24 hours in a day. I think you've already said that once. And I remember not too long ago, there was a meme going around on social media that, you know, Beyonce only has 24 hours in her day too. And like, on one hand, you're like, yeah, she only has 24 hours just like I do, but she also has, you know, trainers and personal chefs, and she's probably not making the 11 p.m. diaper run to Target on her own. Like, she probably has an assistant doing that for her.
Exactly. And that's what, you know, really gets to me is that, you know, I see a lot of people, you know, you'll see on Instagram or you see YouTube channels, you know, people selling you the dream, mm-hmm. you know, like, you, if you do these things, you're going to find the nirvana that you want. And, you know, I always look at those quote unquote perfect people and say, you know what, nobody's life is that perfect. I think that that human aspect on, you know, everybody has a goal or a dream, and I think it's important to work toward that. But life is not perfect. It's messy. And I kind of like it that way because there are some beautiful surprises, you know, that you get in life. I look at things and I've realized over the last so many years that, as your podcast is called, this Chasing Creative, it really is something that if you don't love what you're doing for a creative, you know, aspect, then don't do it. You know, nobody says you have to write something or you have to do a podcast or you have to this, but if you really enjoy it and it's something that's really helping you, like, make something new and share with the world. I mean, now with the internet, you know, again, you could put a book up, you could put a podcast up, you can make a film. People all around the world can see it and to experience it. If you're not inspired by that, I'd say, you know, then maybe it's just not for you, you know. Do it at your own pace. Take what's going to work for you. And, you know, there's no person that has, again, the correct script to say, here are the 5 steps that are going to get you from point A to point Z and you're going to be successful. What might work for me, you know, may not work for someone else. But what I hope in that nonfiction book that I wrote, I hope that the stories that I tell, the behind the scenes, you know, the dark parts where I talk about how challenging it was to be able to get some of these books done and what that, you know, the personal sacrifices I took, my wife, you know, took on, our relationship took on. Like, I think sharing those stories is really the human aspect of what we're talking about here, you know. Because you have to make individual choices on a day-to-day. What is going to be more important for you? Yeah. You know, are you going to spend time with your kids? Are you going to stay up till 4 a.m. to get something done because you have a deadline for work or for your book or wherever that? There are many difficult choices that need to be made. And I think as a creative person, I've tried to focus more on not beating myself up as much and say, you know what, it's okay to get sleep. Or I don't think that's a bad thing.
No, it's good. Have you read the book Essentialism by Greg McKeown?
No, I have not. I'm going to write that one down.
Yes, it's really good. And if you forget about it, I will remind you about it. I tell everyone about this book. But it is, what is the tagline? I actually have it sitting on my desk here. One second. Let me lift up like eight other books to find it. Oh, goodness. It is called, the tagline is The Disciplined Pursuit of Less. And so McKeown's whole shtick is, you know, you as a person are meant to do one thing and essentially one thing at a time. But there is a place in which, like, you are giving, like, your highest contribution to the world and you need to focus on that and forget everything else. So his big deal is, like, saying no, say no, say no, say no. If it's not essential to, like, your purpose or your mission, say no. And it's a really practical book. He walks through how to select between things, how to choose between two good things, how to get clarity on a decision. And then also he has an entire chapter devoted to sleep, which I think is something that so often we just don't even talk about as creative people or even as high achievers. A lot of the time people are like, oh, well, I only need 4 hours of sleep, or I get all of this done and I don't sleep at all. And that's just not sustainable. And he shares a couple of CEO stories about people who like literally got sick to the point that their doctor's like, you just need to quit your job and rest for the next like year, 2 years, maybe forever. I don't know if your internal organs are going to recover from the stress that you put them under trying to do your job. And I just thought that was so awesome that someone who had done a bunch of research on this actually put an entire chapter about rest into their book on productivity, essentially.
I'm going to have to pick that book up because I know in the last, I'd say 5 years, I purchased a Fitbit. And so, yes, it helps me with tracking, you know, running, but it also tracks my sleep. And so I've actually made sleep goals. You know, if I don't get X amount, you know, per night, then I failed. And I can feel, you know, your body really does not do well when you get, you know, not enough sleep. And sleep is extremely important in that self-care, you know, set of skill sets and tools to focus on.
Yes, yes, it is. So one other way that you said that you stay positive and kind of keep going creatively is that you network with other creative people. So how do you network as an introvert so that it doesn't just suck all of the energy right out of your day? I know a lot of the times networking for me means that I have no energy left to create anything. So how do you kind of draw those boundaries between networking and then also saving energy to do your creative work?
I would say the most networking that I've done in the last several years starts out in, you know, electronic form, listening to somebody's podcast, writing them an email, or following them on Twitter, mm-hmm. and then having a bit of a Twitter chat. You know, by doing that, I've you know, a bit on different podcasts over the last couple of years, just because of building those relationships with people like, hey, I know X topic. Would you like me, you know, to be on your show so that I could share with, you know, your audience what mm-hmm. I know? And so I've done that aspect. And that's a very low threshold because, again, it's a simple you're writing an email or you're writing a couple of tweets and you're going back and forth. I've also, you know, pushed myself a little bit harder to go to a writer's conference. I think it was 2 years ago up in New York. That was a little bit harder to do as an introvert to basically go to a conference, you know, get to the lunch area, not know anyone and have to walk up to a table and introduce myself and ask if I could sit with, you know, people I didn't know, see if we would sit down and doing that aspect. You know, that's another thing I've done over the years is trying to do more face-to-face networking when I can. And then I've also am part of several Facebook groups with science fiction and fantasy authors. My wife and I both decided to be more involved in our community, just to be involved in volunteering. And I've done things of serve homeless, you know, people meals, I've gone to school board meetings, I've volunteered and, you know, done all kinds of work in the last, you know, 2 years. And I look at that and that can be really difficult to the point where people say to me, well, how are you an introvert? You're mm-hmm. doing all these things in front of people. And I say, you know, being an introvert doesn't mean that I'm shy. It just means that when I do something of the nature of like getting in front of speaking in front of 50 people or 60 people or whatever I need to do, I can do that. But at the end of that, I feel drained and tired emotionally. Yes. I'm using energy. But I also have to make certain that I, again, focus on the self-care. I can't, you know, do this volunteerism and be always on at work and, you know, be on with the kids and be on and on and on and on. I also need then to focus on time of, I want to read a good book, or I want to clean the bathroom and listen to a podcast mm-hmm. alone. You know, just simple things. So I need to have that balance. It's just great to know, like, you can have a hobby, you could have a profession. There's some type of group out there. It doesn't necessarily have to be Facebook. It could be some other group, but there are other people out there that you can connect with. And it could be very low threshold if you're an introvert. It doesn't have to be a very high stress, not at all.
Yeah, I think those are really good points for making sure that your networking sort of aligns with your personality type, because that's something that I think you get these images in your head of what networking looks like, or even just the word networking makes some people like gag a little bit, because you're picturing like some sort of awkward like happy hour thing with business cards and elevator pitches. And it really doesn't have to be that. Networking at its heart is just about connection. And so whatever way you best connect with people is the way that you should network. And I think that you've done a really good job of finding what works for you. That's awesome. So, speaking of networking and, indie publishing and all that, you have another book coming out soon. So can you tell us a little bit about it and when it will be releasing?
Yeah. So the next book is Ahab's Heir. And basically it's book two of the Werewell saga. This is a true story. My kids and I were in a swimming pool over the summer a couple years ago. And for whatever reason, we were joking around and playing, and somehow, I forget it was my daughter or my son, they made a sound like a whale, like, whoa, coming at me. And I said, oh, what if it's like a, and I just came up with a werewolf, like instead of a, like a werewolf, a werewhale. And they're like, Dad, what's that? And I'm like, oh, I don't know, this thing that comes at you in the sea and tries to get you. And I took the idea and filed it away. And then here we are 2 years later, and now I've basically created this whole other, series off of, whatever happened after Captain Ahab in Moby's Dick, after he dies. Like, at home, he has a wife and he has a daughter. Well, the daughter goes on these journeys, and I'm very big in my novels of strong, heroines that are like, do not want to be tied down. They want to find their own path. The reason why I wrote the whole Cinderella Secret Witch Diaries is that, for my daughter, I wanted her to have role models to see that, the princess, or the fairy tale of Cinderella getting married and suddenly she's fulfilled by the prince. No, that's not what my series are about. They go on these journeys and discover themselves and then find adventures. And so this book too is basically, continuing that version on where is Morgan, the central character, going to be able to find about this sea curse, on this mysterious island, and how is she going to solve these problems to, to basically win the day, at the end of things. And it's great to be able to, have this creativity to be able to write, these fantasy, adventure books, and then to, to hear from my readers how much they like them. So again, being able to come up with an idea that literally started in a pool with my kids to, I now have, book two will be out. I can't give an exact date because I'm waiting for the cover. It's probably going to be, I think by the time this podcast launched, in early in 2019, it's definitely going to be out by then.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I love hearing that origin story. Hearing how writers come up with their ideas is so much fun. And that's a really great story to have attached to your book series. That's amazing.
Thank you.
So since we aren't sure of the exact release date yet, but we know that it will be out by the time this podcast airs, why don't you tell us where our listeners can find you online so they will then be able to find all of your books?
Sure. You can find me at Ron Vitale, and that's R-O-N-V is Victor, I-T-A-L-E.com. All my books are there. You can also look me up on Twitter. My handle is Ron Vitale. If you want to network with me, feel free, reach out. I like to pass things onward. People help me to get me to where I am. I was able to ask questions on, how to do this, how to do that. So I am open to, getting questions and helping people. I think that's a really important aspect of being creative, is sharing the knowledge that you have. I take that seriously.
Well, excellent. Thank you so much for joining us today, Ron. This was such a great conversation, and we can't wait to share it with our listeners.
Oh, thank you so much, and it was a pleasure to be on the show. It was a great conversation. I really enjoyed it.
We hope you enjoyed that great conversation with Ron.
Abby and I were both really inspired at how he's been able to make space for being an active parent and working full-time alongside all of his creative goals. So as you look forward to setting your own creative goals in 2019, we hope that you'll take some of his lessons to heart and maybe think about how you can set up your own loose routine or schedule for making those creative things happen. And remember that everything is a trade-off and that you might have to make some sacrifices to prioritize your creative work. Like Abby said in the episode, we really recommend the book Essentialism by Greg McKeown, especially at this time of year. It's just a good reminder of how to say no and set those boundaries so that you can really focus on the priorities that matter most to you. And if you are in the goal setting frame of mind at the beginning of the year, I would also recommend that you go back and listen to our episode on setting creative goals that we recorded last January. That is season 4, episode 11, and we'll link to that in the show notes in case you missed it last year or if you just want a refresher at the beginning of the year. I know I'll be listening to it again to see if I accomplished all the things that I thought I wanted to this year. So with that, we hope you guys have a happy new year and have fun chasing those creative goals. And until then, we will see you next time. Thanks for listening to the Chasing Creative podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, be sure to stop by chasingcreative.com to check out the show notes, catch up on past episodes, and subscribe to the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you'd leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also join in the creative conversation by tweeting to us at Abigail E. Krebs or at Brooks Editorial, or by using the hashtag ChasingCreative on Twitter and Instagram.
If you have any feedback for us, drop us a line at chasingcreativepodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Until next week, go chase your creative.